The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at Lowe's.com/lowest price guarantee. Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
You are unmuted. Oh.
But now open, you may be seated.
All right, good morning. So I just saw a transcript that was placed here on maybe referenced this morning, and there's a motion to limit Dr. Rentschler that I just got that I'm not prepared for. So that will do later today, okay? All right. So the Commonwealth's motion to call witnesses in rebuttal. I've read everything. Ms. Little, I appreciate you getting your opposition to me. I think I had it by Saturday morning, so I appreciate it. I read all the cases on it. Does the defense want to be heard any further on this?
Yes, please.
Okay.
With regard to Dr. Crosby and Ms. Coon, as the first...
Speak into a microphone.
Sorry?
Speak into a microphone.
With regard to Dr. Crosby and Ms. Coon,
the Commonwealth has been on notice that the defendant intends to present a defense regarding the arm injuries, that this was caused by a dog bite. They have been on notice of that, not just for months, but for years. That was presented at the first trial. The Commonwealth does not have a right to rebut information that they have been on notice of from the start of the case. So their decision to wait for rebuttal to call these two witnesses is improper, and we're asking the court to exclude their testimony.
All right.
As it relates to Dr. Welcher, the scope of his testimony, our request is that be limited to very specific information, specifically responding to the new testing that ARCA has done. As the court knows, the Commonwealth has proposed a number of new testing ideas, as well as information that is greatly outside the scope of what ARCA intends to testify to. And so we're asking that the court limit their testimony from engaging in new testing that has nothing to do with what ARCA has testified about at this trial. With regard to Dr. Walter's testimony, the court has made very, very strong rulings that Dr. Wolf, as well as Dr. Rentschler, are not allowed to speak to the credibility of Dr. Welcher himself. And so some of the information that the Commonwealth proposes is to directly attack the testimony of Dr. Wolf and Dr. Rentschler. And under the court's rulings, we're asking that the court limit that scope as well.
And I told you I would.
Thank you.
All right.
Mr. That's Brennan, all, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mr. Brennan, do you want to be heard?
Regarding DNA evidence, evidence cannot be rebutted until it is introduced because the defense has a number of potential ideas of areas of testimony. Does not compel the Commonwealth to try to anticipate or deflect attacks, especially if they're meritless. And so the issue of dogs and dog DNA does not become relevant until the defense calls a so-called dog expert. They raise the issue, it's proper grounds for rebuttal. There are three witnesses, Ms. Hartnett, UC Davis, and Dr. Crosby. If Dr. LaPosada is precluded from testifying about dog bites, we would not call Dr. Crosby as a witness. However, regardless of what Dr. LaPosada says, we would ask to call Ms. Hartnett and to call the witness from UC Davis. It is an issue that directly affects the assessment of Dr. Russell, the very expert they chose to call in the case in chief, and so we can now, from my perspective, properly rebut it. Second issue regarding Dr. Welcher, limited to the new information you will see from the testimony or have heard. Most of the testimony is new, but we understand it's limited. We don't expect Dr. Welcher to have a direct comment on the credibility of any witnesses, but he will address the tests, how he believes would be the proper procedure, and there'll be a number of issues that have been raised on direct examination, but he will not in any way have a comment on the credibility of the defense experts.
All right. So the case law supports me allowing this motion. I'm allowing the Commonwealth's motion. So the motion for rebuttal witnesses is allowed. Mr. Brennan has said he will not call Dr. Crosby, depending on the testimony that comes in. So, all right, Jim, I'm just going to give you this.
Thank you.
All right, so the motion regarding the testimony of Dr. LaPosada. So the Commonwealth is moving specifically to exclude, there's a motion to exclude irrelevant photographs. We'll deal with that after the main motion to exclude certain testimony. So if we start on page 7, of the report, that's where you want me to start, Mr. Brennan?
Your Honor.
Okay, page 7 of your report. I have some questions. So, Mr. Jackson, Dr. LaPosada cannot opine about the investigation of the case, the law enforcement investigation. She does that throughout her report. So she can't opine to that, but when we get to page 7, what do you say is out, Mr. Brennan? I mean, I've gone through it, I know what I think, but it's the Commonwealth's motion.
I think that her opinion about no object being present to cause a pattern injury is appropriate.
And where are you, on page 7, the first paragraph?
Yes, photographs and descriptions of okay. The site. It is the...
All right, I might have a different page 7. So my page 7, okay.
Top paragraph.
Okay, yep.
Dr. LaPosada's proposed opinion that photographs and descriptions of the site where Mr. O'Keefe's body was found show no object capable of producing a pattern injury, I think, is appropriate. His body was found on flat, grassy ground, probably frozen and covered with a minimum amount of snow. I agree, it's appropriate. It is the next paragraph where it begins in the middle of the sentence. It is logical to conclude that Mr. O'Keefe was injured elsewhere and his body was moved to the front line. There is no basis in fact for that. It's an improper opinion.
Yeah. So I told you that on Friday, Mr. Jackson. Great. Okay, so that's out. And Mr. Jackson, again, the medical examiner erred in her diagnosis of hypothermia. Again, that's the improper critiquing of the expert. She can say that it wasn't hypothermia, obviously. Okay, so same with the first sentence of the next paragraph, the Wisniewski spots were misidentified. Great. All right, so we can probably do this much quicker then. All right. All right, so page 8 is fine. So now we go to page 10. So this is the dog bites. So if you want to pick it up at... What does the Commonwealth say about this?
At this point, there's no basis provided that she has the training, expertise, methodology to provide an opinion regarding a dog.
What's the offer of proof on this, Mr. Jackson?
It will be more extensive when I establish the foundation. Testimony, but basically, she's not only done autopsies involving dog bites, the wound pattern recognition related to the source of those dog bites, she's also taught classes on wound pattern recognition, source of coming up with diagnoses concerning the source of specific pattern wounds. She has a methodology that she uses. Medical school classes, if I didn't mention the courses.
What does she teach? Is this in her CV? Because I didn't see it.
It will be in her foundation that I will lay in front of the jury.
Right.
I don't see any opinion unless and until the foundation is properly laid, but she has extensive experience, not only with specifically with autopsies that she's conducted herself, but supervising autopsies of others that deal with pattern recognition, the methodology involved with pattern recognition.
How about dog bites?
Dog bites specifically, five autopsies. I believe she will indicate that she's done five autopsies as they relate to dog bites. A medical school class specifically on the issue of wound pattern recognition, which that class includes dog bite recognition.
All right, so we'll need a short voir dire of her on this before she testifies.
Because the court doesn't believe that I can lay the foundation in front of the jury and just forego a voir dire. I won't ask any ultimate question until we go to sidebar, but I think we short-circuit that.
Well, she's very specific about the dog bites here. So if she's seen five autopsies with dog bites, I'm not inclined to give it to you. Okay? Seen only five in her 40 years or whatever.
It's not that she's only seen five. She's performed five autopsies.
Okay, so that's why we need a voir dire. So we need a very short voir dire.
She's also been qualified on the issue of dog bite wound pattern recognition in federal court as well.
Okay.
So she has a plethora of foundations.
Has that been provided to the Commonwealth in advance of today?
I
none of it has. So here's the difficulty, whether it's a voir dire or it's in front of the jury, I have absolutely no ability to research and cross-examine her on dog bites. She can say she had one case or 50 cases, that she testified in state or federal court, or she took a class. I can't verify it. I can't contradict it. I have no ability to prepare for this witness about her basis, methodology, and experience in dog bites. What I have is her showing a couple pictures that she pulled from a book, and then she has some Google or Shutterstock research in her report. And so the idea that she has a history or basis is going to be uncontested because there's nothing I can do to contest it, and that's not appropriate. I should be able to research, get transcripts, vet, and be able to approach the witness on whether or not she actually has the reliability of education and experience. I can't do that if we call her an ass or a voir dire.
No, that's where, if we want to compare apples to apples, Dr. Wolf, Azen Wolf, was allowed to testify, to specifically testify to the wound pattern, or his interpretation of wound pattern recognition to the back of the head. That was nowhere in his report. That was objected to by the defense. Mr. Alessi went to sidebar, strenuously objected, said this is nowhere in the report, we didn't have any notice of this, and the court said, overruled, he's allowed to testify to the pattern of recognition, at least in his mind, you can cross-examine him on. There is no requirement that the Commonwealth have every single case that Dr. Lovasada has ever dealing with.
No, we had an expert on dog bites who I allowed to testify as to dog bites based on, we had a whole, as you know, it was Mr. Lessie, I think 3 days with Dr. Russell on the voir dire. This is new to me. I'm going to have a short voir dire on to what she can testify to.
I have no problem with voir dire. I just wanted to short circuit it. So,
all right. So let's go on to page 17.
Commonwealth has an objection to the third line. Mr. O'Keefe's pattern injuries on his right arm do not correspond to injuries that could have been produced by a regular fractured plastic pieces impacting his arm. She is not qualified as a reconstructionist or biomechanical engineer. She has tried in other courts and been rejected. She does not have the experience, the background, or the ability to make any problem.
What do you say, Mr. Jackson?
Your Honor, I believe she does, as a medical examiner, have the experience and it's the qualification, it's the specific job of and the qualification of a medical examiner to opine on pattern injuries. If the foundation is laid, especially as it relates to motor vehicle accidents, and now we're not talking about dog bites, which are a more defined subset of her overall experience. Now we're talking about motor vehicle incidents and accidents that she has specifically seen thousands of.
Okay.
So she does have the qualification to say, if the proper foundation is laid, that the wound pattern that I see on Mr. O'Keefe's arm is inconsistent with anything that I've seen in terms of a motor vehicle accident.
So let's just find out how many motor vehicle accident autopsies she's done during that voir dire. What I have a question about is taillights are typically made of durable polycarbonate or acrylic plastic. I would keep that out. I'd be inclined to allow in the injuries on his right arm do not correspond to injuries that could have been produced by plastic pieces impacting his arm. But let's hear about that.
I wouldn't ask for polycarbonate. I have no intention of asking about that.
And also, the last sentence, I think it's okay, and we'll see with voir dire. Neither did his skin show any array of irregular, unpredictable, randomly scattered cuts and scrapes, assuming she has experience with autopsies of motor vehicle accidents. But I would keep out the part as would be expected from pieces of shattered taillight. Was there more on that?
I object to that because this is now yet another witness that is coming in under the guise of some type of specialty, but really for accident reconstruction.
All right, so let's see what she says on voir dire regarding her experience with accident victims. I think she gets more into the accident reconstruction on the next page that I don't think is proper.
Which I am not seeking to introduce.
All right, so that whole first paragraph on the next page, you're not seeking to introduce?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, at least the first, we're starting with the first sentence, yes, we would be seeking to introduce that. Pedestrian injuries produced by contact with motor vehicle include a component of tissue crushing force as the car profile protrusions connect. That's basic, I believe, that she does have the qualifications to opine about that. That's pretty standard and that should be admitted.
She has absolutely no experience in accident reconstruction. Or the injuries, she is not a biomedical engineer. They have one, and he's going to testify to it.
Yeah, I have that as out, Mr. Jackson.
The reason that I believe that it's appropriate is because you don't have to be a biomechanical engineer to understand when you see, for instance, a known pedestrian accident, what are the results, especially if you've seen hundreds or maybe even thousands, what are the results that you typically see in the wound patterns, for instance, crushing forces, broken bones, fractured bones, crushed soft tissue, things of that nature, internal bleeding. That's the province of medical examiners.
Okay.
Exactly what they are trained to identify and to opine on.
Okay. So
I don't get into things like, for instance, what she doesn't have the experience to do is say, when a car is involved in a rollover collision, these are the mechanical forces that are exerted on the body during a rollover, and the G forces that are subject, that the body is subject to in a rollover, things of that nature. When a car is impacted head on by another car, there are a number of G forces that are put upon the body, etc. Those are biomechanical issues that have nothing to do with her expertise, and I wouldn't be seeking anything like that. But once the body is removed from the car, and then it's on the autopsy table, that's where her expertise begins to fly.
Okay.
She can talk about, and I believe she has the experience and the qualifications to talk about, what the body suffers at the hands of a vehicle, pedestrian, incident, or accident.
Okay, so the first two sentences are out. The third sentence, she can testify that Mr. O'Keefe had no bruising on his arms or torso. And she can testify, and she cannot say that would have resulted from the impact with the SUV rear profile. She can say Mr. O'Keefe did not have bruises on his legs. She cannot say from bumper contact, but she can say as shown by dissection of leg tissue and muscle at autopsy. And she can't testify to anything else in that paragraph.
Okay. Your Honor, is the court ruling that she cannot say anything about the human body contacting a motor vehicle? That sounds like what the court's saying.
No.
I think that's too narrow a ruling.
It is. You can put this in, what I said you could put in, can come in, and the rest cannot.
For instance, and this for point of clarification, if I ask her, would you expect, I'm just going to make a hypothetical, would you expect if his legs were contacted by a moving vehicle, would you expect to see a bruise or contusion?
What do you say about that?
I don't object. One, it's leading. Second,
well, I'm not asking the question.
Secondly, this is asking to have Dr. LaPasada do accident reconstruction. She's not assessing a wound. I'd ask you to consider the case of Commonwealth versus Tompkins, it's the Hills Court. I think we provided it at 105 Mass App 1124, 2025 case. In a similar attempt was made to try to use Dr. LaPasada as a biomechanical accident reconstructionist. The trial judge did not credit her proffer and found that she failed to meet the requisite criteria for Daubert landing it. And so recently it's been found by at least another court that she is not competent to do this because she's a medical examiner, does not allow her to come in and start endorsing or vouching for the article witnesses. They already have witnesses to do that. And so not only on page 18, going back to page 17, about the pattern injuries on cars wanted injuries to a light, she would only know that if she had the training experience.
I'm sorry, where?
You said on page 17 you would allow Mr. O'Keefe's pattern injuries on his right arm to not correspond to injuries that could have been produced by a regular fractured plastic pieces impacting his arm. That's not her role as a medical examiner. That is the role of a reconstructioner, a biomechanical engineer. And she clearly is not competent, at least as cited by the appeals court, to have that type of opinion. And so there's one thing to assess wounds, there's another to try to correlate or draw a distinction between the wounds in a car collision. It is essentially giving an opinion to the jury, he didn't get hit by a car. That is the core fundamental theory of the defense. This is simply trying to bootstrap another witness to give that opinion. That's improper.
All right. Sure.
Mr. Brennan's going to cite the Tompkins case. He needs to cite the Tompkins case. That dealt with a situation in which the witness was called and she was asked by the lawyers, specifically in that case, the people that called her, the lawyers that called her, to opine about blood stain pattern recognition, blood spatter evidence on the driver's seat versus the passenger seat, and what her opinion was about who actually was driving the vehicle. It was a rollover collision in which people were ejected from the car. She was then asked to opine about bloodstain patterns in the driver's seat and whether that was more or less consistent with the blood, the originator of blood, one particular individual, was he more likely in the driver's seat or the passenger seat at the time of the bleeding, and was it before or after the rollover? Very, very different set of facts. And of course, That is a biomechanical engineer's province. And the court was correct in saying, I'm not going to credit her testimony on that issue, but that's what she was asked. She opined on it initially. The court said, I'm not going to credit her testimony.
All right, so
to do this type of analysis and move pattern recognition, which is what she's being asked.
So let's see with her voir dire this morning.
Okay.
She actually was allowed to testify about what pattern is deconstruction testimony that she was not allowed to testify.
I read the Superior Court judge's decision. I have not read the appeals court rescript, so I need to do that. I'd like to get going, but there are photographs of inside the garage. You intend to put this in through Dr. Lopezada?
No, not through.
Through whom?
With regard to these photos, well, ultimately, Lopezada will be shown them, correct? That they'll be introduced through our investigator who took the photos. We intend to call that investigator after Dr. Wolf testifies.
And what will that investigator say? These are photographs.
So he will testify to two subject areas. One would be took measurements from the street to the various entrances to 34 Fairview. I just happened to call. Testify about what those measurements were. And then where he took several photographs, we have pared them down to, I think, three or four, just of one establishing shot showing the garage from the street, and then a couple of photos showing the side entrance to the garage, the pedestrian entrance to the garage, which also showed the interior of the garage, including a step and a
For what purpose? How are they relevant?
I'm sorry?
How are they relevant?
So the defense is presenting a Bowdoin defense in this case. We are alleging that the police did not do a thorough investigation. They did not really investigate anyone other than Karen Reed. The Commonwealth's own evidence, including the testimony of Ian Griffin, is consistent with John O'Keefe after what they claim to be the trigger event in Dr. Welch's initial report. John O'Keefe walking in a westerly direction, which would be from Fairview Road to the house, taking approximately 36 steps over a distance of 25.4 meters, which is approximately 84 feet. That is consistent with him entering the house. It's consistent with him entering the garage. The police did not take photos of the garage. They didn't investigate, is there a hard surface in the garage? Is there a ridge-like surface in the garage? And these are photos are introduced on that Bowdoin issue to say that there was evidence in the house. If the police only went in there, they would have seen that. And that may have sent them in a different direction. So it's relevant for that purpose.
Do you want to weigh in on this?
These are not only relevant and not material, it's misleading. They are not seeking to have measurements from the flagpole to the door. They're trying to seek measurements from the driveway to the door. There is no evidence whatsoever John O'Keefe was ever on, near, or anywhere by the driveway. The evidence is that he was at the flagpole. While the data showed there was a turn westward, it didn't show movement westward. It did not. It was a measurement from the flagpole to the garage door. That is something that I think would be appropriate. From the driveway, totally irrelevant. There's no evidence, no witness, no substantive evidence in this case that John O'Keefe went in the house, went near the house, was dropped off. They're relying simply on the fact that there were 37 steps. They have no idea what direction or where. What they want to do to argue this is to show inside the garage and then posit a theory that somehow John O'Keefe was killed in the garage, it was colder than it was in the regular house, that would account for the temperature on the battery. They have no evidence to support that. You can't use Bowdoin as a panacea. You can't just say Bowdoin, they should have done what we want them to do. It is what is reasonable. The police went into the house, they spoke to the occupants of the house. There was no evidence that Mr. O'Keefe went into the garage. You might as well take a photograph of anybody else's garage in America and put it up in front of the jury. So this is going to create a mistaken, baseless argument that this evidence somehow shows that Mr. O'Keefe was A, in the garage, and B, he was injured in the garage. That's why they want to show it to Dr. Lopezada. Couldn't some of these angles have caused the injury? Total speculation. No relevance at all, and it is just prone for an opportunity to mislead this jury. This should not come in.
If I may respond in four ways. First of all, Mr. Brennan just informed this court that there was no evidence of the movement of the phone. I'd like to quote his own witness. At 12:25:30, the device's bearing shifts to a westerly direction, as location records also show the device moving west from the roadside toward the house. So that was false. Secondly, with regard to, we should be measuring from the flagpole, our theory is not that he entered the house from the area of the flagpole. Our theory is that he was placed at that flagpole. And as Mr. Brennan correctly points out, there's no evidence that they introduced as to where he was on the road prior to walking into the house in that westerly direction. Our theory is as good as his. He cannot do anything to contradict our theory. The third thing is that Ryan Nagel and Heather Maxson saw Karen Reed in her vehicle alone. The passenger seat was illuminated and empty. John O'Keefe was nowhere in the area of that vehicle. He was not in that vehicle. There's only one other place that he could be, and that is in the house. So finally, the fourth point, Your Honor, this court has continually always done, as the court should, a 403 analysis. The probative value we have established through their own witnesses. They called all of these witnesses, and they established the foundation for the admission of these photos. There is no unfair prejudice. I argue that any time there's exculpatory evidence or a case that advances the defense theory, that's by definition going to prejudice the Commonwealth's case. This is not unfair prejudice. He is allowed, Mr. Brennan is allowed to cross-examine this witness and to make whatever arguments he wants to make about the likelihood of the garage being involved or not. But he does not and should not get the benefit of the fact that his investigation, the police investigation, didn't do what we just did. And this evidence should be admitted.
The argument is purely rhetorical. There's not one fact he offers. The witnesses that saw the car saw it in front of them. Nobody ever got out. A light on doesn't mean that he wasn't near the car because they didn't see him in the front seat. So there is no evidence that Mr. O'Keefe went anywhere near the house, on the breezeway, in the door. It is speculative, it is baseless. They want to take that baseless argument and then bootstrap it to Dr. Lapisade to further speculate that something in the garage that could have caused the injury. That is not Bowden. That is not a due process right. That's not 403. It's empty. It's no factual predicate whatsoever.
Okay. So
the only other thing, just to put a cap on this, the location data circles, again, Mr. Brennan's own evidence, he introduced it, puts John O'Keefe in the house as well.
All right. So I'm going to allow you to do the measurements. These photos will mark for identification. The photos are not admissible. So, all right, Chrissy, can you just mark those, please? All right, let's bring the jury over. We will do, Mr. Jackson, how long will you be with Dr. Wolf?
Probably 20 minutes.
All right, and depending on that. All right, so during the morning recess, we'll do the voir dire of Dr. Lopez-Hada. All right, let's bring him on over, please.
All persons have any business before the Honorable Beverly Canoni, Justice of the Norfolk Superior Court, and for the County of Norfolk. Draw near, hear your attendance, and you shall be heard. God save the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. This court is now open. You may be seated.
Okay.
Good morning again, counsel. Good morning, jurors. So we appreciate your patience. We were in here trying to streamline things, so we got a lot of work done this morning, so thank you. I do have to ask you those same three questions. Were you all able to follow my instructions and refrain from discussing this case with anyone since we left here on Friday? Everyone said yes or nodded affirmatively. Were you also able to follow the instructions and refrain from doing any independent research or investigation into this case? Everyone said yes or nodded affirmatively. Did anyone happen to see, hear, or read anything about this case since we left here on Friday?
No.
Everyone said no or shook their heads.
Thank you.
Can we have Dr. Walker, please?
Thank you. Mr. Hollenbein, you're still under oath.
All right, good morning.
Good morning.
All right, Mr. Jackson, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Dr. Wolf, thank you for joining us again this morning. I'd like to draw your attention to a picture. May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
I'm going to show you. Have you ever seen that photograph?
Yes.
You were shown this photograph last week, is that right?
Correct.
By Mr. Brennan, correct?
Correct.
Do you recognize the photo as the same photo that you were shown last week?
Yes.
Under questioning by Mr. Brennan?
Yes.
And what does that appear to be a photo of, just generally?
It appears to be a photo from the of the test dummy from the 29 mile per hour impact test.
And does that appear to be a true and accurate photograph of the condition of the dummy following that 29 mile an hour crash test?
Yes.
With the court's permission, I'd like to enter this as next in order, please.
Okay.
If you could hand that to the court.
Exhibit 218.
Permission to present that, Your Honor?
Yes.
Is this the photograph?
Yes.
Dr. Wolf, first of all, what caused the damage? Well, let's start with the most basics. Which arm is this, left or right?
This is the left arm.
What position was, you called this dummy Rescue Randy, is that right?
Correct,
what
yes.
What position generally was Rescue Randy in upon impact during this test?
He was oriented such that the right side of his body and his right arm would be contacted by the vehicle.
What caused the defects in the and the damage to the sweatshirt as we see it here?
That was due to the interaction from the Rescue Randy sliding on the pavement surface to his position of final rest.
Is that sometimes called road rash?
Yes.
Did you see any road rash in any other place on Rescue Randy in this photograph?
It doesn't appear so in this photograph, no.
Can we highlight the face? What about there?
Sorry, I thought you were talking specific to the clothing. Yes, the as I mentioned on Friday, there were signs of road rash to the body of the dummy itself on the face and on the torso and arms.
Can we zoom in on the sleeve a little bit? Do you see the staining on the sleeve as well as the defects, the holes and the tears?
Yes.
What is that staining from?
again, just from that sliding contact with the pavement, so it's just likely debris and kind of a film from the pavement surface being deposited onto the material.
With regard to John O'Keefe's sweatshirt that you reviewed photographs of, did you see any other defects other than the right arm and the fact that it was cut off of him medically?
No.
Any other indication or any indication whatsoever of anything that you see consistent with road rash?
No.
Okay, let's go back to the full frame. The second image I'd like you to take a look at, if we could have the lights for just a second.
Do you recognize what's depicted in that photograph?
Yes.
How do you recognize it?
It is the backside of the test dummy from the 29 mile per hour full-on impact test.
Which arm is featured in that photograph?
That would be the right arm.
Move that into evidence as next in order, Your Honor, with the court's permission.
Okay. Exhibit 219.
Permission to display?
Yes.
Does that appear to be the right arm of Rescue Randy as he's face down?
Yes.
Is that following the impact?
Yes.
Do you see any? Were you shown this photograph by Mr. Brennan on cross-examination?
No, I was not.
Can we highlight the right sleeve just a little bit, please? You see that defect in the sleeve?
Yes.
Do you also see some artifacts above that defect, above and to the left?
Yes.
Can you tell what those are?
They appear to be fragments from the back window of the test vehicle when it shattered.
Does there appear to be any additional, let's go back to the full frame. Does there appear to be any additional defects on that particular sleeve?
There appears to be some material transfer likely from the pavement and also some road rash.
Does that appear to be transfer from the pavement?
I think that might be a shard of glass from the back window.
What was the condition of the back window after this test?
It was completely shattered.
Okay. The defect that we're looking at, that large gash, was that from road rash sliding on the pavement?
Yes.
If we can go back to the full frame, please. I'd like to show you an additional photograph. Do you recognize what's depicted in that photograph?
Yes.
What is it?
It is the front side of the test dummy from the 29 mile per hour full-on impact test.
Does that appear to be a true and accurate depiction of the condition of Rescue Randy in that sweatshirt after that 29 mile an hour impact?
Yes.
Move for the admission of that photograph, Your Honor, is next in order.
Okay. Exhibit 220.
Permission to display?
Yes.
Can you describe what we're looking at in this photograph?
This is mainly showing the upper body of the test dummy from the 29 mile an hour impact test, showing the road rash to the front side of the body.
Were you shown this photograph on cross-examination?
No.
What caused the holes in the bodice of the shirt? In other words, the part that covers the chest and the torso.
After the impact, the dummy was projected and sliding on the pavement surface. So again, this is consistent with the front side of the body sliding, making sliding contact with the pavement, creating those abrasions and holes. And again, that asphalt material transfer that you see on the front.
Can you go up back to the full frame, please? Do you see additional road rash? Take a look at his right arm. You see additional road rash on Rescue Randy?
Yes.
On both the fabric and the arm itself?
Correct.
Go back to full frame. And can you see his face as well? in this photograph?
Yes.
Are those the chin and nose defects that you saw?
Yes.
Are the defects in the shirt that you see here consistent with the condition of the shirt of John O'Keefe as you saw it in the photographs?
It is inconsistent.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
I have another photo that I'd like to show you. Do you recognize, do you recognize what's depicted in that photograph?
Yes.
What is that? We can take this down.
It is the rest position of the test dummy after the 29 mile per hour impact test.
Were you shown this on Friday?
No.
Is that a true and accurate depiction of the condition of Rescue Randy just from a different angle after that 29 mile an hour impact?
Yes.
Move for the admission of that photograph.
Okay. Exhibit 221.
Permission to display that photograph, Your Honor?
Yes.
Is this an overview of the entire body of Rescue Randy after that impact?
Yes.
Take a look at his torso, the exposed portion of his torso. Do you see road rash on his exposed torso?
Yes.
Do you also see that the road rash that you earlier described on the bodice of the shirt, the front of the shirt?
Yes.
And what about, let's go back to the full frame. Is there also road rash on his jeans?
Yes.
If we could go back to full frame. Have you ever heard a phrase, knocked out of your shoes?
Yes.
Where are the dummy's shoes?
They are still on his feet.
And this is at an impact of 29 miles per hour, correct?
Watch the form of the question.
Sure. What was the, tell us one more time, what was the speed of this impact?
This was a full-on 29 mile per hour impact.
We can take that down.
May
I approach?
Yes.
Take a look at that photograph and tell me if you recognize what's depicted in it.
Yes.
What is that?
It is the back of the test Lexus after the 29 mile per hour impact test.
Is that a true and accurate depiction of the condition of that Lexus following that 29 mile an hour impact?
Yes, and I should be more specific. It's post the 29 mile per hour impact with the test dummy, not just the arm.
Understood. Thank you. The collision that caused the damage to Rescue Randy that we've just been looking at.
Correct, yes.
Okay. Move for the admission of that photograph, Your Honor.
Okay. 222.
Permission to display that?
Yes.
Is this the rear of the photograph that we were just talking about?
Yes.
And this is the condition of the vehicle after that rearward impact with Rescue Randy, correct?
Correct.
Did the subject vehicle photographs that you looked at, were those consistent or inconsistent with this photograph?
Those photographs were inconsistent compared to the test.
Was there anything consistent about the shirt that you were shown on Friday, the left sleeve that you were shown on Friday with John O'Keefe's actual sweatshirt?
Was any of that consistent with?
Correct. Was that consistent or inconsistent, now that you've seen all the photographs, with the condition of the shirt that John O'Keefe was wearing on January 29th?
The test clothing was inconsistent compared to that of Mr. John O'Keefe's.
Thank you. You were asked on cross-examination several times about the weight of the Hybrid 3 arm. Do you recall that series of questions?
Yes.
You were asked how much lighter the Hybrid 3 arm was than the static estimate arm, correct?
Correct.
I want to make sure we're clear about this. The Hybrid 3 arm is the physical arm that you attached to the ATD and did testing with, correct?
Correct.
The statistical estimate arm is something in the ether, right? It doesn't exist?
Sustained.
How would you describe a statistical estimate arm?
It's probably from taking a sample of the population and getting an average and a high and a low.
Okay. Is that a physical arm? You touch and feel?
No.
Okay. Do you have any information based on everything that you've reviewed at all about the actual weight of John O'Keefe's right arm?
Nothing in terms of a weighed measurement of the arm, no. Okay.
What was the percentage that Mr. Brennan gave you in terms of how much lighter the Hybrid 3 arm was than the statistical estimate arm that he gave you?
From what I recall, I think the percentage was 26%.
Did you calculate that yourself, or did you take Mr. Brennan's word for it?
I believe I took his word for it.
Do you recall what the weight of the Hybrid 3 arm was exactly?
9.38 pounds.
What is the difference, if you can calculate, what is the difference between what was the statistical estimate arm, the number that Mr. Brennan gave you?
I think I heard him say 11.8, but I also think he said at one point 11.6, so I'm not sure of the kind of the final number he landed on.
Sustained estimate. Ask the question differently. Strike in the end.
Does 11.86 sound right?
Yes.
Okay. Let's use 11.86. Do you have a calculator with you?
I do.
With the court's permission, could Dr. Wolf use a calculator if he needs to?
Yes.
Thank you. What's the difference between 11.86 and 9.38? Just in raw numbers?
You're looking at just the difference between those two?
Subtract.
Okay.
9.38.
2.48.
Does that mean there's a 2.48 pound differential between the statistical estimate arm, the heavier arm, and the 9.38 arm that from the Hybrid 3?
Yes, that's the difference in pounds.
All right. How would you calculate how much lighter? What's the proper way to calculate how much lighter in terms of percentage the 9.38 arm is?
You would want to do a percent difference calculation.
Divide 2.48 by 11.86?
Objection. Sustained. Watch the form, Mr. Jackson.
How would you tell the jurors how you would calculate that percentage difference?
You would subtract the 11.86 minus the 9.38, and then you would divide by the sum of those two and divide by two, the average of them.
Can you do that calculation?
Yes. Okay.
And what's the number?
23%.
Not 26%?
Sustained.
Is 23% smaller or larger than 26%?
Sustained. Let's move on from that, Mr. Jackson.
What is the number that you get if you were to divide 2.48 by 11.86?
.21.
In percentages?
21%.
Thank you. Was the hybrid three arm 21% lighter by that calculation than the 11.86 estimate arm?
Yes.
On cross-examination, Mr. Brennan asked you several questions related to kinetic energy formula, correct?
Correct.
You referenced that, did you reference that formula in some of your answers?
Yes.
May I approach?
Yes. May I inquire? Yes.
You're looking at something that's been identified, a document that's been identified as three X's, XXX. Do you recognize that? Oh, you're not looking at it.
Sorry. Not yet.
You see it now?
Yes.
Do you recognize what that is?
It is the formula for kinetic energy.
With that, Your Honor, may we display the formula? We don't have to cut the lights. I think it'll be very obvious.
Yes.
Can we bring the lights back up and see if that's visible? Can you still see that, Dr. Wolf?
Yes.
Your Honor, is that okay?
Yes.
Great. You said this is the formula for kinetic energy, correct?
Correct.
You were asked a series of questions about whether the weight differential in the hybrid three arm would make a significant or material difference in your testing as it pertains to the velocity of the vehicle that you were testing. You remember those questions?
So watch the phone again. Ask a different question.
Just foundationally, were you asked about weight differential of the hybrid three arm?
Yes.
Were you also asked about whether it would make a material difference to the testing if you didn't adjust for the velocity?
Sustained.
What were you asked in terms of, what was the question that was posed to you about the weight of the hybrid three arm versus the velocity of the testing?
That there would somehow be an influence on, I think, wanting to make a reduction to the velocity of the vehicle.
Does that make mathematical sense to you?
Sustained is to that point.
Would that have a material difference? Would the weight of the arm, that 2.48 pounds, would that have a material difference in the testing that you undertook?
No.
Why is that?
Well, for to start, that's one of the reasons why we went above and beyond the 24 miles per hour to impart significantly more kinetic energy to the arm. So if you look at that equation, it's a quadratic equation because you're squaring the velocity. So if you double the velocity, you quadruple the amount of kinetic energy. So you get a significant increase in small changes in speed because of that speed differential.
Did you do a test with just the hybrid arm contacting the taillight at 24 miles per hour?
Yes.
Did you also do a test with that hybrid three arm contacting the vehicle at 29 miles per hour?
Yes.
I'd like to talk about those two tests, okay? Can you explain to the jurors what they're looking at? I want to start with going from left to right. What does the E sub K mean in that formula?
So that stands for kinetic energy, which is the amount of energy that an object has when it's in motion and has a velocity to it.
What is the one half on the other side of the equal sign?
Just a constant.
And what does the M, as in Mary, stand for?
So that would be the mass, in this case, the mass of the arm.
And what's the V, as in Victor?
That would be the velocity of of the arm as it's accelerated.
Why is there an exponent at the top of the V?
Because you're squaring that. So you're basically multiplying the velocity times itself. So it'd be velocity times velocity.
Is this a formula that's traditionally used in accident reconstruction?
Yes, it's very common.
Is it sort of one of the foundational formulas? When did you learn this formula?
Probably back in high school physics.
I'm going to ask you, if you wouldn't mind, to walk the jurors through a calculation dealing with the 24-mile-an-hour test using the 11.86-pound statistical arm as an assumption of the weight of the arm.
Okay.
You understand?
Your Honor, may I have a pen and paper to write?
May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
I have a pad here, too, if whatever's easiest.
Okay. Whatever's easiest. If you assume the mass of 11.86, that's the statistical arm weight, and you assume the V for velocity is 24 in miles per hour. I don't care about the units, doctor. Just assume 11.86 and 24. Can you calculate this quadratic equation?
Yes.
What do you get? I want to do it step by step. What's the result of squaring 24?
So you're not concerned about the units?
I do not want to talk about units.
Just, okay.
If you mention the word joules, my head will explode.
That's, I didn't know if you wanted, yeah, Newton meters, foot pounds. Okay.
Stop it.
So
immediately.
Just 24 squared.
Correct.
Is 576.
Do you always, in this calculation, do you always use the exponent first? Do you always do the square first?
Sustain.
What's the first thing that you do in solving for this equation?
You would want to square the velocity, but it's ultimately all going to be multiplied. But yes, you would square the velocity, multiply by itself.
What's the next step after you get 576?
Again, assuming we're not concerned about units, you would multiply by the 11.86.
Can you do that for me and tell me the answer?
How many decimal places do you want? Nearest whole number?
Two.
Okay. 6,831.36.
What's the next step once you get that number?
You would multiply by 1/2 or 0.5.
Can you do that for us, please?
That'd be 3,415.68.
What does that represent in terms of the energy into the taillight? I realize that we're not dealing with the proper units, but does that represent anything as it relates to the energy that's imparted on the taillight?
That would be the energy to the arm.
Okay.
That's being transferred.
Understood. 3,415.68, is that right?
Correct.
And that was at what mile per hour?
24.
Let's move to a different equation.
Okay.
Now I'd like you to presume different numbers.
I don't know what the question is.
Can you calculate, do the same calculation using the 9.38-pound arm that you actually used in your testing for the mass?
Yes.
And can you use the velocity of the actual test you did of 29 miles per hour?
Okay. And same thing, not worried about units?
Correct.
Okay.
What's the first thing you do in solving that equation?
So if you square the 29 miles per hour, you will get 841.
What's the next thing you do?
You multiply by 9.38.
What's the number?
7,888.58.
And what's the next thing you do in the equation?
You multiply by 1/2 or 0.5.
And what's that final number?
3,000, 944.29.
That would be the number or the amount of energy imparted on the arm at 29, is that right? 29 yeah. miles per hour?
So ask it differently.
Sure. What is that 3,944.29 number? What does that mean in terms of the kinetic energy?
That would be the kinetic energy that the arm has if it were moving at 29 miles per hour and weighed 9.38 pounds.
One final calculation. What is the percentage difference between 39.44.29 and the other test that we just did, or the other calculation, 34.15.68?
So in terms of a percent difference, again, when you're subtracting the two and then dividing by the sum, divided by two, so that's basically the average of the sum, it is 14% difference.
Which of the two tests, the two energy equations that you just did, which represents the higher kinetic energy imparted to the arm? The 24 mile an hour test, that's the hypothetical, or the actual test at 29 miles an hour? Which one?
The 29 mile per hour speed with the arm weight of 9.38.
What does that mean, Dr. Wolf, in terms of the testing that you did with the lighter arm, 9.38 pound arm, at the 29 mile an hour test, as it compares to the hypothetical 24 mile an hour test?
It would be more force and more energy in the 29 mile per hour impact test.
Even though you used a lighter arm?
Objection.
Sustained.
And what was your opinion and conclusion as it pertained to the subject taillight using the 29 mile an hour test? What was your opinion and conclusion as it pertains to the subject taillight? Was that consistent or inconsistent with the damage that you saw on the 29 mile an hour test?
It was inconsistent.
Thank you, Your Honor. That's all I have.
May I, Your Honor?
Yes.
Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning.
Doctor, did you have a chance to speak to anybody from the defense this weekend?
Not over the weekend, no.
After you left here Friday?
On Friday, I let them know that I was returning back home, and then I let them know last night that I had arrived, yes.
Did you receive any new information or have any conversation before you came in today?
No.
Now, when we asked you about weight last week, you did not go into any calculations about the difference between the standard arm, 11.86, and the 9.38, did you?
I don't believe we did, no.
In fact, when you testified last week at the end of the day, you were asked questions by Attorney Jackson about the weight of that arm, correct?
Yes.
And when you were asked about the weight of the arm, Attorney Jackson asked you if you were asked a lot of questions about the difference in the weight of the arm, about 11.8 pounds statistically as it relates to Mr. O'Keefe versus 9.4 pounds. Do you remember him asking you about that?
Yes.
And you were asked whether you were aware whether anybody had measured the weight of John O'Keefe's right arm. And you responded, I'm not aware of that, no. Remember that testimony?
Yes.
And then you were asked, when you asked questions about whether or not his arm was 11.8 pounds, are you aware of anybody ever just weighing just his arm? And you said no.
Correct. Correct.
And finally, you were asked, what is that based on, 11.8? Where did that come from? Remember what you said?
Yes.
I don't know. Remember you answered Attorney Jackson and you said, I don't know where that came from.
Right, referring to, I don't know what source you pulled that 11.8 from.
Uh-huh. And so you were suggesting that that is just a number pulled out of thin air, right?
Sustained.
Was that a surprising estimate, 11.8 to you?
I don't know that it was surprising. I don't know what your source is for it.
Well, when you engage in accident reconstruction, you never just take somebody's limb and sever it and throw it on a scale, do you?
I'm not usually doing that part of the analysis, no.
So when you're relying on body weight and different parts of the body, there is strong statistical studies that give you a guide, isn't there?
I would agree with that, yes.
Well, the numbers just on the thin air. If you're doing a study and you have to figure out damage to an arm or a foot or a leg, and you have to come to an estimated value or weight, you have to get that information from somewhere, don't you?
I would agree, yes.
So you can make it up out of thin air. You have to find a resource, a reliable, vetted resource.
True?
I would agree.
And that's what you do.
In some instances, yes.
Well, in this case, you chose an arm that was 9.38 pounds. Where did you get the support that the 216-pound, 6'1" man would have an arm that weighs 9.38 pounds? Where did you get that from?
Well, it's conservative from the standpoint, if you think about one of the equations we talked about last week, force is equal to mass times acceleration. So if we take the acceleration data from our test and we multiply it by a lighter mass, the 9.38 pounds, it's less force to the arm. So now if you want to increase the mass of the arm, you're now talking about a greater net force to the arm. So it's conservative from a force perspective.
Put aside your story about the force perspective. Objection. My specific question is...
So it's sustained. Ask the question differently.
Thank you. I'll ask you again, Doctor. Tell us where you got the 9.38-pound value from when considering a 6'1", 216-pound man. Where did you get that from so you could be statistically accurate?
It is the mass of the hybrid three arm. We saw the photograph that depicted the weight. Again, how you account for that when you're doing the force calculations is you would utilize the acceleration data that we measured, and then you would apply a different mass, in this case, a heavier arm. And I will note, it's the same thing that Dr. Welcher did in his drop test with the hybrid three head. He ultimately measured the acceleration of the head, and then to calculate the force, he adjusted the mass of according to Mr. John O'Keefe's mass of his head.
So for the third time, I'm going to ask you just a very simple question. Dumb it down for me if you can, okay, Doctor? Where did you get the source to legitimize using a 9.38-pound arm for a person that's 6'1", 216 pounds? Where is your source to say that arm is validated to use for that size man? Where is that?
Again, it's the weight of the ATD arm. That is what the 50th percentile arm weighs. As I mentioned, in our field, it's accepted to utilize the acceleration data, and then you adjust the force based upon an increase in mass.
Is that your answer?
Yes.
Mr. O'Keefe's body weight and size does not put him in the 50th percentile like the 9.38 arm. He's closer to the 95th percentile. Isn't that fair to say?
Correct.
And there is, in fact, the 95 percentile crash test dummy, isn't there?
There is, yes.
Yeah. You chose the 50 percentile, which is shorter, yes?
Correct.
Weighs less, yes?
Correct.
And the arm weighs less, true?
Correct.
The truth is you have absolutely no study, no paper, no article that supports using a 9.38 arm for a 216-pound man who's 6'1". You have not one reference or study you can offer us right now, do you?
I don't agree with that, because again, if you look how Dr. Welcher did it, he used the 50th percentile in his drop test with the head, and to calculate the force, he adjusted for Mr. John O'Keefe's mass of the head. Same thing is done in this instance with the lighter arm. We adjust for that in the calculations.
You have one paper, one study. I know the answer to this, so let me ask. You have one paper, one study to support that it is appropriate to use the 50th percentile 9.38 arm for a person who is 6'1", 2,216 pounds. I won't ask you again, but if you can answer this once for me. Do you have one paper, one study?
So I'll take out the commentary. Can you answer that question, please?
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
You have one paper. Give me a name, an author. One paper, one study that supports using a 9.38 arm, 50th percentile, when you're doing a crash test for somebody who's in the 95th percentile who weighs 216 pounds and is 6'1". One paper, sir.
I don't have a paper because Dr. Rentschler is addressing the forces and the injuries to the arm.
You talked about, however, would you come up with the number 11.8? Like it was something that is curious or foreign to you, right?
Objection.
Sustained.
Are you confused how the number 11.8 would come up?
Objection. I'm not confused. I don't know your source for it.
When you do studies, would you agree that the head has a similar weight to the arm? And that the weight of an arm would be about 5.48% of a person's body weight.
I'm sure that there's various studies out there that talk about that could be one particular study.
Well, let's talk about one study. What do you think? You're the engineer, you're the expert. When you're weighing an arm by percent, what is the percent of the arm of the total body weight?
I don't know as I sit here today off the top of my head, no.
I'm sorry?
I don't know as I sit here today off the top of my head.
Well, if you don't know the percent of body weight of the arm compared to the whole body, how would you ever come up with a number for the arm?
Well, from the work that I've done with Dr. Rentschler in this case, dating back to last year, it's my understanding that his calculation for the arm was approximately 11 pounds.
So you're relying on somebody else's study? You're doing an independent assessment of the evidence, and you're relying on other people's math? Is that what you're telling us?
I don't agree with that because, as I've mentioned numerous times, Dr. Rentschler and I worked as a team on this case. You can't separate the reconstruction part from the biomechanical part. It's an integral part that works together on it.
Would you agree that the arm is about, statistically vetted, that it's 5.48% of the total body weight? Would you agree with that?
It sounds about right, but again, I don't have the percentage off the top of my head.
So if you take 5.48% of a 171-pound man, which is the crash test dummy you were using, the 50th percentile, what do you get?
You said 5.48%?
Yeah.
Just over 9 pounds.
Okay. Close to 9.38?
9.37.
Okay. Now when you have 216 pounds, 5.48%?
11.8.
Sound about right, doctor?
By that calculation, yes.
Okay. Now, you said you had some confusion where I'd get that number from, this 11.8. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And when I threw out that number, is that the first time you heard of that number?
The 11.8?
Yeah.
Yes.
Or 11, is that the first time you heard of it from anybody, 11 pounds? Is that a new number to you?
I don't understand your question.
Well, you're saying that when Attorney Jackson asked you where did Brennan get those numbers from, you said, I don't know. Remember that on
Correct.
Friday? Do you know where I got the number 11 pounds from?
11.8 or 11?
11.
As I just mentioned, last year, I believe I testified in a previous proceeding that it was about 11 pounds.
Yes. Your testimony, 11 pounds. Your prior testimony, right?
Yes.
You testified before under oath in this case, didn't you?
Correct.
And when you testified under oath, then you were giving a general estimate about the pounds of Mr. O'Keefe's arm. Based on your experience and your training, you said it was around 11 pounds. Those are your words, right?
Correct, yes.
Under oath.
Yes.
Right. You can't delete something that's under oath, right?
Objection.
Sustained.
And so when you feigned confusion on Friday about this 11 pounds.
Objection.
Sustained.
So when you answered questions last Friday about wherever this 11.8 pounds came from, you weren't so confused about that because you've used 11 pounds before yourself, haven't you?
Yes, but again, I don't know where you got that 11.8 from, so.
Well, we just did the math, didn't we?
Yes.
Okay. And you used the calculator to help you, didn't you?
I did,
yes. The calculator works?
Yes.
Okay. You said you wouldn't calculate the difference, but you did. And so what you just went through this exercise is you divided that difference, that 2.48 pound difference, right?
Correct.
And then you divided it by 11.86. Divide 2.48 by from the 9.38.
Okay.
What percentage do you get?
26.
Would you agree with this statement about whether the arm and body weight, comparing the weight of the head to the arm, would you agree that the head and arm are actually almost identical because your arm, just one of your arms, including the hand, forearm, and upper arm, is about 5% of your total body weight? So for someone who weighs 216 pounds, that's about 10.8 pounds. Would you agree with that?
I didn't do that calculation, so I
didn't ask you. I'm asking if you would agree with that.
Can you repeat the question, please?
So ask the question.
Does the arm weight weigh the same as the head, or the arm does weigh the same as the head, almost identical because your arm, just one of the arms, including the hand, forearm, and upper arm, is about 5% of your total body weight? So for someone who weighs 216 pounds, that comes out to about 10.8 pounds. Would you agree with that?
I haven't done the calculation, but if the math checks, then yes.
Okay. Would you agree with this statement? The heavier the object, if it gets hit center mass, that's going to be even greater force because that is more mass than just 11 pounds. So the acceleration is the same for each body part. It just depends on the weight of the body part and how heavy it is to determine the force that's actually exerted on the body. Do you agree with that?
Objection.
I'm going to allow the question.
Do you agree with that?
Yes, and I think I described that a little bit earlier, is you would increase the mass, you multiply it by the acceleration, that's going to increase your force. Force is equal to mass times acceleration.
Right. So mass has a direct correlation to force. You agree?
Correct.
So therefore, the heavier the object, if it's colliding at the same speed, will create more force than a lighter object. You'd agree with that, wouldn't you?
Correct. More force on the arm, yes.
Right. So weight matters, doesn't it, sir?
Yes.
Force is mass times acceleration. So if the arm weighs the same as the head, you're still going to get the same force. And so inevitably, you change the mass, you change the weight, same speed, it changes the amount of force.
Correct, yes.
Yeah. Okay. When you did calculations in this case, you never took the estimate of 11 pounds, although it didn't exactly calculate the 5.48, you never took that 11 pounds and determined the percentage difference between the mass in that arm and the mass in a 9.38 pound arm, did you?
No, I did not.
You didn't include it in any of your PowerPoints?
No.
You didn't explain it to the jury that there's a difference in weight matters?
Again, that's something that Dr. Rentschler is going to discuss.
I'm asking you because you testified, you gave opinions, you got a PowerPoint. Did you explain to the jury about the difference in force when there's a change in weight? When you did all your PowerPoint and calculations, did you break it down for them?
Well, I think it was certainly stated. I mean, I know that we went over Newton's second law, force is equal to mass times acceleration, right? So if you increase that mass number, it will increase the force.
When you were putting up your PowerPoints with the speeds, did you explain to us that there's a difference when you change the mass so that if you used a lighter arm, there would be a difference in force? Did you explain that to us in any of your slides?
I don't know that I explicitly stated it, but again, that's why we went up to 29 miles per hour to account for that difference in weight.
Were you trying to inflate the force for the speed of test, so it looked like the collision had to happen at a faster speed to cause a certain amount of damage. Were you doing that intentionally?
No.
You didn't overstate the mass. You didn't use an arm that was 14 pounds that would have created the opposite illusion, right? You used a weight that was lighter than Mr. O'Keefe's estimated arm.
Right, because, again, it goes both ways. If you increase the mass of the arm, you increase the force on the arm. So there's going to be more force acting on the arm.
Let's talk about your studies with Mr. O'Keefe's sweatshirt and his arm, and you gave some opinions about what you would expect for damage to his arm. When I asked you on Friday whether you had any support, any vetted journals, learned treatise, any support whatsoever about whether you should use a crash test dummy arm for these types of studies, you didn't have any support on Friday. Do you have any today that you can refer to?
No.
Putting aside the fact that you have absolutely no professional studies or journals to support that you should be using a crash test dummy's arm for these types of tests, are you aware of the expert literature in this case that the opposite, you specifically should not use crash test dummies when you're trying to do this type of analysis on clothing and a person's body? Are you aware whether that exists?
I'm not aware of those studies, no.
As a inquisitive engineer, wouldn't you want to know if there was legitimate studies in your world, in your profession, that suggests or states that you should not be using crash test dummies to determine injury to the arm as far as lacerations? Would you want to know that?
I think, again, you're getting confused between my role and Dr. Rensley. Can I finish, please?
No.
Objection.
Okay. So, no comment, Mr. Brennan. Answer the question, please.
I wasn't addressing the lacerations or the abrasions to the arm, sir.
You had photographs and you were opining that you would have expected or you would not expect there to be abrasions or cuts on that clothing in your test A and B, didn't you?
There were no holes or cuts in the material, no.
I understand, but you offered opinions. Didn't you offer to the jury an opinion that the abrasions on Mr. O'Keefe's arm were inconsistent with your tests in A and B?
The cuts in the holes are inconsistent. Mm-hmm.
Sir, when you are assessing cuts and holes on clothing, you need to make sure the predicate as a basis that you're using the right properties, right?
I would agree with that.
Right. And so if there was literature directing that you should not use a crash test dummy to assess injury on an arm, would you follow that instruction or would you do it anyways?
Can you keep saying injury to the arm? I was looking at what happens to the material when it makes contact with the taillight.
A crash test dummy's arm is harder than a human arm, isn't it?
Yes.
You push a human arm, it's like an indent. You can push in, can't you?
Yes.
And that property of pushing in, if a cloth is on it, it is easier for a cloth to tear pushing in than if it's hard, isn't it?
I don't know that I agree with that.
Well, do you disagree with that?
Well, the hybrid arm is a vinyl flesh, so it's not rigid.
Do you disagree with what I just said?
Can you repeat your question?
Sure. Human arm, softer than the hybrid, yes?
Yes.
When you push it, you can push in, much different than the hybrid arm, which is stiffer, yes?
I don't know what you mean by much different, but there will be a difference, yes.
Well, is it a noticeable difference to you if you push a hybrid arm as opposed to a human arm?
Yes.
When you push a human arm, it indents, yes?
Correct.
And so if you push with cloth on, the cloth indents, yes?
Correct.
Which creates an easier, it creates an easier tear in the fabric with less force if you can push in as opposed to a hard arm. Would you agree or disagree with that?
I would agree with that.
So when you're replicating studies and giving opinions about a person's arm, a real person's arm, using a hybrid arm doesn't seem to be an appropriate standard, does it?
I don't agree with that because, again, when the taillight breaks in the test, the arm is now moving with that taillight. So it's, again, like we talked about on Friday, you'd somehow have to have those fragments accelerating at a greater velocity to penetrate that.
We're going to get to that, but I'm talking about the stiffness. Let's get back to the appropriateness of using a crash test dummy. Now conceding that a human, it pushes different than the crash test dummy, would you agree that a crash test dummy is not an appropriate tool to use when determining tears in clothing on somebody's arm? Would you agree?
I don't think I would agree with that, no.
When you used the crash test dummy in test A and B, that was the 5'9" dummy?
Yes.
When you considered tears to clothing, you bought a new sweatshirt that was similar to Mr. O'Keefe's, an extra large sweatshirt?
Don't know if I recall the exact size, but I think one of them might have been an extra large.
And then you bought a second one that was medium. So when you used the smaller dummy, you weren't actually using Mr. O'Keefe's size of extra large. You used a medium sweatshirt, yes?
Yes.
Because it was a smaller dummy than the size of Mr. O'Keefe. That's why you needed a smaller sweatshirt, yes?
I think it was more or less just what we could get our hands on.
Well, you had an extra large and a medium. You didn't put the extra large on in test A and B, did you?
I don't recall off the top of my head what sizes were on each test.
Okay, could we show a picture of A to remind Dr. Wolf?
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer.
Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong. The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Whirlpool kitchen appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy two or three select major appliances. And when you buy four or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your kitchen's unique needs and style. Shop Whirlpool 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.